Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
February the 24th, 2022, the 23rd of Adar 5782. This is the day that Russia has invaded the Ukraine. Times of Israel reporting right now. Ukraine says it is facing a full-scale invasion. Troops said have crossed the border from Belarus. Kiev's foreign minister says Russia's aim is to destroy the Ukrainian state. Russia says it is targeting the Ukrainian military infrastructure. Ukraine shuts airspace to civilian planes. Air raid sirens 1 minute ago have sounded in Lviv, the western Ukraine city where the embassies are located. Troops have been seen entering the Ukraine, also from Belarus, and Russia says it is targeting Ukrainian military infrastructure. Ukrainian Zelensky has declared martial law, and he vows victory. Well, I'm not sure that anybody thinks that that is possible, but what is likely to happen? We've managed to get hold of our analysts. We've asked them at very short notice to join us this morning, and they have done so. Timbisa Fakuda, political analyst at Asia Dialogue, thank you for joining us on such short notice. I appreciate it. What now?
Well, Putin has chosen the wrong side of history. Mm-hmm. And what we're going to see happening now is the possible destabilization, not only of the region, but of the entire world. There's going to be a disturbance of energy supplies, as it's already started. The dollar, the price of oil has gone past $100 per barrel for the first time in 7 years. So the situation is deteriorating. So that's where we find ourselves now. It's an all-scale war, and even those in South Africa who feel that that doesn't or is not going to impact on their lives, it's certainly going to impact on their lives, and we must just brace ourselves. I'm just hoping that our president, Cyril Ramaphosa, remains part of this coalition of dictators called BRICS. He will begin to consider his position, because you have all of these people who are suppressing rights in their own countries, whether it's Bolsonaro of Brazil, Modi of India, Putin now, and Xi Jinping, who continues to oppress his own people in Hong Kong, Tibet, and is also threatening something similar in Taiwan. So South Africa must really consider their position within BRICS, whether we want to be associated with these dictators and continue to be part of this coalition, or we are going to do the right thing and just cancel our membership and get out of that coalition called BRICS, which has become, in fact, irrelevant at the moment. So it's a very sad day in history, and Vladimir Putin will be remembered as perhaps one of the worst person in the 21st and 22nd century.
What's so incredible is we keep looking at this, or I keep looking at this and thinking, why on earth does he need this so badly? He has to know he's going to destabilize the world. One of our correspondents earlier said that he was opportunistic in that he's taken a time where Germany has a new chancellor, Biden isn't particularly strong. He's taken this opportunity, but he still has to know how he's going to be remembered, and it can't be favorable, surely.
But I'm not quite sure whether he cares about that. He's obsessed by this expansionist project that he's involved in, the resuscitation of the old glorious Soviet Union. Mm. And they've never regarded all of the so-called, in inverted commas, territories as being independent. He's been meddling in the businesses of Belarus, Georgia, and Ukraine, because he does not regard them as independent states. So he wants to revive that old, Soviet Union's stature and position within the politics of the world, and that's why he's doing what he's doing in Ukraine. He has been insisting that the Russian-speaking Ukrainians were not treated well by Kiev, and that's why he went in there. Imagine if King Swati decides that the Baswati or Swazi-speaking people of Nelspruit were not treated by South Africa, and as a result, he was going to go in and vote and protect them. This is a very dangerous precedent in terms of international politics, because you are going to be emboldening all of these secessionist and separatist people around the world, and those, of course, who want to take over territories, particularly China. In South Africa, we have similar challenge. For example, some people in the Western Cape, in Cape Town in particular, want to take their own stand.
Exactly. Well, we've already gone on in Orania. I was just thinking the same thing.
So
that's really just such a weak pretext with such a thin veneer to say, oh, you know, I need to go into a country to protect the interests of our citizens or people who speak our language. What bothers me here is that there's nothing fresh. It's almost exactly the same. And somebody said he's not Hitler. Well, I'm not saying he's Hitler, but certainly the strategy is very, very similar.
No, certainly very, very similar. And it's very tribalistic, if you really think about it. And it also exposes the clumsy drafting of borders just across the world, where you just put a line and say you are Ukrainian and we are Russians, and these people still share culture, languages, etc. So eastern part of Russia, particularly Luhansk and Donetsk and the Donbas region, they've never really regarded themselves as part and parcel of Ukraine after the collapse of the Soviet Union from 1989 to 1991. So they've always looked towards Russia for their cultural compass, and they've always looked towards Russia for political direction and perspective. And unfortunately, the Ukrainian governments, I'm not blaming Volodymyr Zelensky, but they've also neglected a very important fact, which was that of continual working towards a national cohesion. They've not been doing that. And as a result, you have these people who are far away from action from Kyiv, who have continually wanting to align themselves with Russia, because, of course, Russia has been good to them in terms of sending all the necessary things that they needed. And this separatist movement that started in Donbas region, the first thing they did was to go to Vladimir Putin for support, and he has been supporting them. So day before yesterday, when he said, I'm going to recognize Donetsk and Luhansk as independent states henceforth, there were celebrations in that part of the world, because they've never regarded themselves as part of Ukraine. So you have, it's historical, this tribalism, this clumsy drafting of borders, and at the same time, you've got this one man who lives alone, by the way, in big palace, and he's got nothing to do except thinking about how he can misuse his big toys in threatening the stability in neighboring countries, and that's what he has done at the moment.
Aside from the moving itself from BRICS, what else can South Africa do?
Well, there's absolutely nothing they can do. Number one, we're very far away geographically. There's absolutely zero we can do. Mm. We can make a noise because we've got an influence, at least at the AU. But President Cyril Ramaphosa has moved and is looking towards the West. He's embraced by the Western countries, and his relationship with Putin has deteriorated. So I don't think it can speak sense to Putin, notwithstanding that, of course, South Africa is part of what is known as IPSA and BRICS. Mm. So what I think he will do is he likely to align himself with Americans in the West. He has established a very strong relationship. We saw what happened in G20.
Absolutely, and we need them.
Yeah. So he's well entrenched within that club. So I don't see him playing any major role. The best he can do is to try and influence the position. Even that position is not going to be that influential or strong. At the AU level, where at least he can go ahead and influence some of his colleagues there to issue a statement of condemnation. But given that China is also, we all know that Vladimir Putin had to wait for the Beijing Olympics to end, not for him to steal the limelight, and that was agreed, because this was like hours after that last closing ceremony in Beijing of the Winter Olympics ended, and then he started making or escalating noises about him going into Ukraine. So China is part and parcel of this, and China is going to be emboldened, no doubt about it, because Xi Jinping has got similar ambitions on Taiwan. So that was
going to be my next question. If we see this almost in a way that we saw the Second World War, where you've got everybody lining up to take sides, I would imagine that China would take the opportunity, in other words, agree with Russia on something so that it can do exactly the same with Taiwan and have that expansionist idea go.
Yeah, sure, definitely. I mean, China is now going to be bold. They'll do as they wish. He said so, Xi Jinping, if you remember last year in his that inaugural speech he made after he was given powers as being much more bigger than the previous leaders of China in terms of ideology, etc. So he is certainly going to be doing the same. But you also wonder what people like Erdogan in Turkey are going to do, for example, in Cyprus, because Turkey has got that also going on in Cyprus, being hanging on to this dream of incorporating Cyprus into Turkey. So you might also see Tayyip Erdogan also moving towards Greece and also annexing Cyprus. So this opens up all sorts of possibilities.
Absolutely. And in fact, just another one to add, we were speaking to our Israel correspondent and talking about the fact that the one thing preventing the Iranians from being present in southern Syria to some extent are the Russians, because the Russians are stopping them from being there, which means Israel's placed in a very precarious position should they come out too strongly against Russia. Even though we know that Israel and Ukraine have a strong relationship, they are very vulnerable because Russia is stopping the Iranians and Hezbollah from being present in southern Syria to a limited extent. So we see all of these shifts around the world that place people in very, very, place countries in very difficult positions.
Well, indeed. But I think with Israel, it's going to be totally different because of the normalization process that's taking place in the Middle East. We have more and more countries now normalizing relations. And chances are when the term of Naftali Bennett expires, you are likely to have Yair Lapid, who is seen, by the way, as much more keen in terms of pushing the normalization process.
Yes.
Chances are you might just have this expanding to other nations in the Middle East. So it's going to be different because hostilities seem to be
lessening,
to be coming down in that part of the world. So it's going to be totally different. But I think countries like Iran are likely also to be isolated if you really think about it moving forward, because what's been happening in Yemen and Iranian. By the way, Iran also has got expansionist ambitions in it supporting Hezbollah. It continues, for example, to support the Houthis. And the Arabs are not necessarily going to be very, very keen in ensuring that the Shia madhab or theology expands in a dominantly Sunni-dominated part of the world. So Saudi Arabia and other countries, particularly many of the Sunni Arabs, will make sure that that doesn't happen. So the expansionist program of Iran, it doesn't have really doesn't have prospects, and many people don't understand that. There are no prospects of an Iranian expansionist project or ambitions in the Middle East, because the Sunni, besides just countries opposing Iran intervening in their businesses, just the Sunni dominance of in the Middle East will prevent that from happening. So We hope that this does not really encourage other secessionists and expansionists, politicians in the world, actually, from going ahead with the ambitions of destabilizing the entire world.
Tembisa Fakuda, political analyst at Africa-Asia Dialogue. What a fantastic discussion. Thank you for bringing us that perspective.